Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here as always with my producer, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing today, Mike?
Fabulous day.
Okay, really, that's not what I heard.
Fabulous day.
Good that you're being positive for everybody on the mic. I'm excited to be here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It's gotten a little chilly.
It's gotten quite chilly, yes.
And apparently all the hotties in Williamsburg have been scared off by the sub-50-degree temperatures. Now it's just a bunch of trolls and cretins walking around when I make my way here.
We're also recording at the time of Art Basel, which means a lot of chicks, I think, are in Miami.
Oh, is that like an OnlyFans convention?
No, it's like a weird, dumb art thing.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Just trying to be funny.
Being facetious. I got it. Well, right. You know. It's a podcast.
Well, that's why my career is where it is, because obviously my humor doesn't work. If laughter is the best medicine, then I'm killing a lot of people. But I wanted to talk about a few things. Obviously I want to promote we're coming up on gift giving season.
We are. Yeah.
And I think there's no better gift you can give than money to me.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can do that a variety of ways. If you like this show, you can join my Patreon, patreon.com/JL Covan. You can order a cameo for a loved one. I just crossed the 2,000 career cameo mark.
Wow.
Yeah, I've made a ton of money on that site. It's been pretty good. And I never had to do any nudes.
Not yet.
And Cornell West video will be making its debut soon. By the time people hear this episode, I will have already debuted it. But I'm hoping people order some Cornell West cameos.
That'd be good.
I've got 8 stand-up albums, 2 Trump albums that you can download, purchase, or gift. And then I have shows coming up in February in Florida, and I'll be in Vegas in March. Don't have a ticket link for that yet, but that's just so people will, just block out all of March.
Yeah.
And it's going to be March 23rd, that I can tell you. So that's great news for me if you pony up some cash, or it's just a waste of time if nobody does that. I just wasted showtime. Mike is checking his phone. So let's get on with some topics. Mike.
Checking my phone. I'm running a business here, JL.
I know.
I got a lot going on.
No, I know. You're not watching The Golden Bachelor, or you didn't watch The Golden Bachelor, I should say.
I followed the fact that it exists, but no, I did not watch it.
Yeah, well, like Owen Wilson said in Zoolander. I'm a big fan of Sting.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Sting. I don't listen to his music, but he's making it, and I respect that.
Yeah.
I watched the last like 3 episodes because I was traveling a lot when it debuted. I didn't have a chance, but I kind of was interested just because I'm not a fan of those shows, like The Bachelor, all these ridiculous kind of artificial shows. They're just because they're not filmed over the course of 10 months. They're filmed over the course of like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to genuinely manufacture the kind of emotions without alcohol and unstable people.
Yeah.
But with older people, I was like, this is actually a chance potentially for these are fully formed people, perhaps on who've been married, who are widowed, divorced, who are like looking for a final partner, not for like another person to fuck or some clout.
Yeah.
And subsequent seasons of The Golden Bachelor are going to be rough because now the secret's out. So it's going to be one of these like testosterone supplemented like 68-year-old guys with a 6-pack next and a bunch of like augmented chicks. It's like, I'm 70, but people think I'm 39. And it's going to be like disgusting and shallow. It'll eventually get to like a trashy place. But this first season intrigued me because I was like, everything that's there seems kind of like, hey, he's a widower.
Yeah.
He's got two, he's 72. He looks great for 72. But there was an authentic, organically sort of wholesome approach to this thing that I don't think you can ever have again.
Yeah.
So I watched a few episodes and I did enjoy it, but I've been baffled and I've gotten some nice praise for my, Gary impression, online, because it's just basically like this and it's, hey, Mike.
He sounds like a Teletubby.
Yeah, well, he does sound funny. And what I like is that it's one of the life hacks I think that I've learned from the show is he has 2 hearing aids.
Huh.
And so he looks at the women very intently when they're speaking. And I think these dumb old bitches think that he's attentive when he's just like, no, I have to look at you seriously just to get what you're saying. And they're like, nobody ever listens to me as well as he does. It's like he has to.
Yeah.
But he's like kind of goofy, but he's nice looking and he seems warm. And the big backlash after the finale, because they have, I guess in January there'll be a wedding episode. He's going to marry this woman from New Jersey, and the way people turned on him, it's like they have never seen The Bachelor. Like, because it's older people, they're much more invested and it feels much more real, which I think it is. I think these women really are like, hey, I'm 66, I'm 70. I know what I want. I know how to connect with somebody. And there is something very refreshing about that. Like, it's like, we don't have the time. We've come from a generation. We don't have to bullshit. We didn't, you know, we lived our adult lives without all the bullshit.
Right.
So, and now we're even older and have more wisdom or experience. But he cut somebody when he was down to the final three. He cut this one woman who's just built like a brick house. And I mean that in a good way. Like just, I forget her name, Faith. Faith was her name. She's just a very well-built 59-year-old.
Yeah.
And it was down to Teresa.
I don't know if I've ever heard a woman described as a brick house.
Oh, yeah. No, the chick on Ted Lasso, man, that's a brick skyscraper. Hannah Waddingham.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
No. Jesus, I've never watched Christ. That shit.
Well, it's not good, but I'm a cultural commentator. I can't just hate things arbitrarily. I have to consume them and then hate them with arguments.
Right.
But it was down to Teresa, who he picked, and Leslie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Leslie is a very nice-looking woman in her mid-60s, and she was devastated. And she kind of exposed the whole fallacy of this thing when she was like, so 12 hours ago, you said you loved me and things changed?
Yeah.
And I was like,
did he tell her he loved her?
He had told her in an episode he loved her. And of course, we don't know, was that 3 weeks ago or a day ago in terms of editing?
Right.
But it seemed, and Laura called it, he was always going to pick the woman Teresa, who may not have been, quote unquote, as attractive necessarily as Faith or Leslie.
Right.
But she's like, she's older. They both have similar experiences. They're both widower.
Right.
They do have a connection, I think, that's real. But man, online, it is crazy. Like the comments I get from my video, like, he is a fraud. He is a total fraud.
There were those, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter, maybe?
That he had been in a relationship
that
before?
He like treated a woman not great. I don't know the whole details of it, but I think there was some news that came out that was not flattering. But again, it's like reality TV. It's like everybody's got some skeleton in their closet. And I don't think he did anything like illegal or immoral. It's just like sometimes, yeah, people
when
are,
a woman says no,
right,
she means yes.
I don't think there's any of that. I think it was just like this guy was kind of a scumbag at times. Which, hey, man, life, men, what do you think?
It was shocking to me to see that, like, it kind of reminded me when Jon Stewart went on Crossfire and exposed it as a bullshit show.
Right.
And I was like, well, yeah, kind of.
Right.
But it's like, you're a comedian. You can come on here and you don't have to obey by any of the rules. You can just be like, guys, this is all a charade.
Right.
And I felt like people getting mad at Gary, you know, were sort of like, yeah, but this is reality TV. This was all filmed in a month.
But I think that people tend to believe, I don't know why, but something that, especially that's on like ABC, mm-hmm. like a network like that, that there is a true wholesome quality and these people have been vetted and that they've never made a mistake.
Right.
And I think a lot of people watching in the Midwest feel like they've just like, they found one woman or man, they went all the way with them. There are no relationship skeletons in their closet when the reality is that everybody's a human being and there are no, you know, Norman Rockwell paintings.
Right.
A guy mistreated a woman for a little bit and like wasn't the nicest to her. I mean, that does happen. It's not great behavior, but
little shop of horrors.
Yeah. Know? Right.
This guy treats Audrey terribly.
Suddenly Seymour.
Oh, what great vocals from Ellen Green. I get it also because the power of the Golden Bachelor is like once he told two or three women, he told three women he loved them.
Yeah.
Why wasn't there outrage then? Like, in other words,
right.
They wait till the end, but it's like, but he told three women he loved them and you were okay up until it was a final two. Then when it came down to it, he couldn't say it again because he had clearly chosen the other woman.
Right.
And there was this very impact, like powerful scene. And I think the woman, there was no acting in this shit.
Pause for one sec. Can you just fix your, can you unplug and replug the mic? And I think something happened.
Hello?
Yeah, you're back.
Oh, shit. So where should we restart from?
Just restart it from whatever your last thought was. Told the women.
Why is Mike having me unplug the microphone?
Not that.
Oh. Well, he told, sorry.
He told three women that he loved them.
So Gary tells three women he loves them, and nobody was like, the chatter was not like, what's he doing? This is crazy.
Right.
But when it came down to the final two, it almost felt like maybe people just didn't want the littler woman to win, because then it was one-on-one, and she let him have it. And I remember the crowd cheered like live when she was like, you lied to me, and like, I don't care how you feel right now. I care. Like, and I did respect the fact that the show felt like emotional Hunger Games or emotional Squid Game for seniors, where it was like, this is your last chance at love. No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, by the time this has come out, another show on our network, Big Wigs, Anna Roisman made this exact point that there is a finality to the idea that these people are, it really is like potentially their last shot at love. In, you know, you can advertise it on television, but like when you watch young people on The Bachelor, like somebody that's 25, it's like, it doesn't work out. They're fine. They're going to get on Hinge. They have a bunch of Instagram followers. They'll figure it out. If you're like 72 and you now just had this like public embarrassment on television, like,
aren't you embarrassed?
Right. That might turn you off from dating for till the end. You know, that might be it.
And you know what? If it is, so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're old.
Right.
Like, you got a shot. What do you say to those people who didn't even give a shot?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So how about some gratitude, ladies? Okay. You got to matter for a minute. And there's still OnlyFans, and porn fans are growing older every day.
Yeah.
You know, the fans of MILF porn in the 90s are now looking for that GILF porn. Yeah. So, you know, just get on something. But yeah, I do think the show will suck after this, because now everybody knows, like, you can only surprise it like this one time.
Right.
But, you know, I think, Jerry is not, or Gary, what the fuck is his name?
Gary.
He spells it so weird though.
Yeah.
It's
but
like
I think G-E-R-R-Y.
It's still,
I think it's still Gary.
Yeah. No, it is Gary.
Gary, right. Like Gary.
It's like Jerry.
You know,
really?
He did remind me of a little bit though. Like, is there a little Gary Johnson thing happening there?
There's more of a, like, it's more of like a nasally Cory Booker.
Oh,
is
okay.
Really like Cory Booker is more, I have had many cups of coffee this morning. and Gary is more like, I only had one cup of coffee. How are you? Are you good? We were in the fantasy suite.
Yeah.
And she let me do it in her butt. And that's when I knew we had a connection. Like, I'd love to hear an X-rated version of Gary, but still speaking in that hokey, folksy manner.
Yeah.
You know, and when, you know, when she let me eat the whipped cream out of her ass, that's when I knew I had found my person. And then I thought the scorned woman, you see, the scorned woman either didn't say anything because nothing happened, or was like, didn't want to further shame herself. Cause I was waiting for that. You fucked me, Gary. You fucked me. I'm 66 and alone, and you fucked me. How could you? Well, it was fun. And I liked the fact that we didn't have to use condoms. Gary, I let you raw dog me, Gary. How could you do this to me? My grandkids are out there. Watch your mouth, bitch. But I don't know that I'll ever watch it again. But I enjoyed what I saw of the first season, because I think, unlike, you know, and I find Jesse Palmer hilarious, because I just kept looking at him and going, if the phrase handsome dummy were like in the dictionary, I think it'd be his picture, because there's something handsome but dumb about his face.
It's the CTA.
But not even that, but like kind of just like, you know, like he's like a character from a movie, like the brainless jock. Not saying he's brainless, but that's how he looks.
Yeah.
You know, but good for him. to, you know, he's a backup quarterback. And now, like, that's the path I think Zach Wilson is maybe looking for.
Maybe. Oh, God.
Is Zach Wilson Mormon?
Yes, but I don't think he is practicing.
Okay. Yeah. Because he was a BYU guy, right? Yep. I mean, he looks the part.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation. Boy, am I disappointed in that kid.
Yeah. I was thinking, by the way, did you know Mormon is like the Mormons' N-word?
I know that they don't like being called Mormon.
They're okay with it now, but Mormon started, I learned this when I was in Utah a couple of years ago. It started as like a kind of slur
for Latter-day Saints.
So Latter-day Saints is the preferred, but they're good with Mormons now. Like,
right.
And I said, I got them laughing when I said, that's like your N-word with a hard N. You can say it with a hard N.
Yeah.
And I was going through just different thoughts because I just finished a Mitt Romney biography and I was reading through it and I was like, oh, there's like, just like I do the thing with Italians. We've discussed the Italians, how I was like, black people are really Italians 2.0 when it comes to culture. There's so many similarities. It's just the greater the struggle, as I think I made this point from Mission Impossible, the greater the suffering, the greater the heights is kind of the, you know, I don't think Italians would have traded slavery to be better at rap and sports.
No.
Right. But you get what I'm saying.
We have our feathers in our caps. We make great suits and cars.
But if you look throughout the cultural icons, it follows kind of a similar path.
Yeah.
Of music, of sports, like they each had their era, and now like angry European dudes are coming from Europe and being like, we had it rough. Now we're taking over the NBA from our war torn countries.
Right.
But. I thought Mormons, you know, is another group where you could draw comparisons and be like, you know, you excluded black people from the church until like the 70s. But hey, Mormons, you have your own, you similar to black people, you took your own slur and made it part of your identity.
Yeah.
And you're probably the two groups most known for having fucked up names. So let's bring once again, a chance to bring communities together. Mm-hmm. You know, JL, why did you say Mormons and black people have fucked up names? Because I was joking, but you know what I mean. You know, it's like DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Here's your meet your roommate, Thorgorp Wynn. Okay, we've gone through some similar struggles. I see. Oh, that was a good made-up name. Thorgorp Wynn.
Sounds like a Marvel character.
But before we get to our main topic and take our first break, I also want to talk about somebody that you apparently aren't familiar with, which I'm shocked, given the demos you often roll with. Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah.
Sydney Sweeney, I asked the question. I don't think people got it on social media. I said, I didn't know Juilliard had a porn program. Because she is an incredibly talented actress. I don't think she went to Juilliard, but she's an incredibly talented actress who is also all about the hardcore sex scenes. Mm. And, you know, I looked up Sydney Sweeney was trending last night on Twitter. So I was like, oh, what'd she do? She break up with somebody? She engaged? She, you know, and I couldn't find, thanks to Elon Musk's new ex, couldn't find why. It was just a series of posts about her. Like, I had no idea why she was trending. Usually, it used to be you could click on like five links. And by the way, you'd be like, oh, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But I'm watching and I was like, oh, geez, I didn't realize I had like opened up like a porn portal. You know, sometimes you'll be like, oh, Mitt Romney's trending. And then you'll get like the third post will be some hardcore porn video with just like 20 terms in it just to get it trending. But I was like, oh, what? Porn. This is porn. And I was like, oh, no, this is a scene from a Sydney Sweeney movie called The Voyeur on Amazon Prime, which as soon as Laura's out of the house, I know what I'm watching. But Sydney Sweeney is so ridiculously hot. And she's on Euphoria. I'm sorry, I didn't mention it, but like she's on The White Lotus and Euphoria.
Okay.
You don't watch Euphoria?
No.
Oh.
That's okay. Definitely not my cup of tea.
Oh.
Euphoria.
Season one was really good.
I don't care about high school kids. I don't.
Don't worry. They're 25 years old.
But they're supposed to be in high school, right?
Right. I love the fact Sydney Sweeney is 25 playing like a high school junior.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think when parents watch that, they're like, is this what high school's like? And I'm like, no.
Well, that's the thing. It's such a wild view of like a type of high school that they kind of did it in the 80s. Remember? There was like, what the hell was that movie with Spader and Downey?
Something zero.
And I can't.
Less than zero.
Yeah. They did a bunch of movies like that, that were just like, look how wild it is in LA. Everybody's on coke and everybody's doing all these drugs. I don't know. I mean, I feel, to me, it's a little, it's a chicken or the egg type thing with high school kids. It's like, are high school kids really living like this? Or are you depicting something that is like in a weird way romanticized, and now high school kids are going to be like, I want to do that.
Right.
You know?
And I got to tell you, I mean, if Sydney Sweeney went to my high school, I'd be like, I'll do drugs.
Right.
If that's what you want to do. But she's like,
she's really, really quite attractive.
Yes. She's like out of control attractive, but she's a good actress too.
Mm-hmm.
And not afraid to get naked. Like, the scene that came up, it took me like 30 seconds to realize, oh, that's just her in a movie. This isn't a porn clip that like invaded the site.
But it's like hardcore?
It's hardcore.
Yeah.
She is not afraid. And I laugh though, because I think Sam Levinson, who's Barry Levinson's son, he was apparently a big time drug addict, but now as a high schooler, I think Euphoria is like loosely based on his life. Mm. And that's the thing. I feel like there's got to be some high schools where the druggies aren't hot.
I went to one.
call me crazy, but I feel like the four models and porn stars that you go to high school with aren't all the druggies.
Yeah.
Some of them might actually be unattractive and weird. But Sam Levinson, I remember reading a quote from Sydney Sweeney where she was like, and he, you know, he had some scenes in there that I wasn't comfortable with, and I said so, and he took them out. So I'm grateful for that. And I'm like, that's pimp shit, where it's like you set it up. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna want this dude to fuck you in the ass, Sydney, and then I'm gonna want him to suck your titty. And then she's like, can we not do the ass fucking one, director? You know what, bitch? Fine. But he gets to double suck your titties. Oh, that's great. Thank you for hearing me. I feel so heard and seen on the set.
Yeah.
I was like, he is setting you up because there is something that show is like, and it just wasn't, the first season was, I thought, outstanding. And then from there it got worse. But she is, I'm trying to think of who the, you know, I don't think I could date her. And I mean that not like I have the opportunity, but there is, that would be too much pressure, I think.
For what?
Just to be the most confident man on earth. I just would be like, it gets to a point where she walks down the street and everybody's seen her naked and everybody's still trying to get with her. And everybody thinks they have a chance.
I don't know that I'd care. I think I'd be all right with it. You'd want to have like a hot girlfriend that everybody's
no it's of course, but it's not, there is a, I just think there is a level to it that is like, people, you say that and 6 months in maybe you're still like, this is awesome, but then like one fight and you're like, she's probably out of fucking bar, just everybody's, I just need one guy that's like into her and like, fuck.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We should try as part of the show. We'll both try to date her. I'll get a hall pass from Laura, and we'll make an effort.
Yeah,
and we'll see. Either one of us. It's either one of us. If you do it, I'm happy for you.
Thanks, man.
But for the show, I'll do it.
Okay.
But yeah, Sydney Sweeney. If you go on X and just like, that's also got to be weird. Where like you look it up and it's like, oh, did she get an Emmy? No, it's just a hardcore sex scene that somebody just uploaded to Twitter and it's been retweeted like a million times.
I'm sure that's got to be weird. But you also go into it knowing that like you're gonna, that's what it is now. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure, as you said, I don't really know much about her. I just literally looked her up, and she's gorgeous. But, you know, we're now at an age where it's like, these are children of the internet. They know how these things work, you know, like
children of the porn, one might say.
Yeah.
Yeah, porn. Oh, okay. Well, guys, in no way did I just get a signal to do this, but why don't we take a quick break for the sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back on Rain on Your Parade. How was your break, Mike?
Fabulous. Awesome. So good.
Awesome. Mine too. We came up with a topic to discuss during the break. So that was a fruitful break. This is kind of a broad topic, but something we spoke about a few weeks ago off mic and with Mike, but
yes.
Off mic.
Yes.
And you had said something to me that was very
profound,
very bordering on profound. I'll give you bordering on profound. which was I was mentioning like the over, how we were talking about comedy specials and how the art doesn't in specifically in stand up, but I think this really applies broadly to our culture, where it was specials don't matter anymore. It was me talking about, I think, Ralph Barbosa, where I was like, you know, it's a good special, but specials used to be like when you arrived, not a stop on your way to greater fame and fortune as a comedian. It was sort of a stamp of approval. You had made it. And you said to me something about like, now that doesn't matter. And then you said, because people like me and other podcasters, because you have to flood social media sites with your content.
Right.
You want somebody to listen to your podcast? Well, they can listen to it, or they can see a clip of you on four different sites and go, interesting, maybe I'll listen. You know, things like that. And you said to me, one day we're going to get to a place where the tools that people have, everybody will be able to do what I can do. And they'll be able to do what you can do.
Come on, let's make it sound profound.
No. I think I made it profound with my next statement. Like I took your step and then made it profound.
Of course you did, JL.
But you said when somebody can do what I can do, and can game the algorithm. Everybody knows how to game the algorithm. We'll just have this like flood.
Yeah.
Of kind of, and I said, right, we're gonna have 6 billion people filming themselves and no one watching.
Exactly.
And you know, you gave me the prose, I gave you the poetry. And I really thought about that like that week, because I'm always prone to thinking depressingly about things.
Yeah, as am I.
And that was a very depressing thought, where it was like, are we reaching, people use the term like peak TV, or with AI, the singularity. These are things that people talk about. Are we reaching the end of culture? And I remember Bo Burnham prophetically said in 2015 during a special, he goes, I was watching the TV the other night and I saw celebrity lip syncing. And I thought, oh good, culture is dead. That's it. We're done. And that was 2015.
Yeah.
Little did I know 5 years later, my star would abruptly stop rising when lip syncing videos on TikTok would become this bizarrely accepted form of cultural genius for like a summer. Not permanently, but it's like, and it was like, really? And I just think, like now I think to everything. So comedy is my area of expertise, sort of. And I see the way people, you know, a special is now, not a special, it's I have compiled 45 minutes of material or the ability to speak and breathe and be on camera for 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for a special. And there is the glut of specials. Like I released my first special earlier this year. I've obviously had problems with what should have been my first special for several years now, but that's after 20 years of doing this. Like I'd done some albums, but I had the old school view of like a special. I want this one to be special. And the one that was supposed to be my first was the greatest set of my life and the greatest hour I've ever produced. And I thought, what a great way to like have a special. It will be special to me. But you look and comedy is now just this like, it's almost how I feel like porn stars must feel after a while, where it's like, yeah, I used to like having sex. Now I just take a couple pills and I find a runaway and we get on camera and I fucking go to Pound Town for 45 minutes. My mind is somewhere else. And then I go home and take some drugs or something like this kind of like comedy is now it's making comedy is like the primary driver now, not good comedy or your best work, but it's like, I'm doing comedy and producing comedy is paramount.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or not is less important than whether you are making it. And I see that with a lot of things. Like I've you know, with streaming, you know, take it broader to like movies and television shows. When DVDs came out, I thought it actually heightened the prestige of things. Like I could own Breaking Bad or The Sopranos. Like TV is now on the level of movies where I can own this important art. And streaming to me, and maybe it'll be different for kids. It's the reason I don't have any ebooks. I believe having a thing, whether it's a book or a DVD, gives it a real world weight. Like you see its representation of its importance to you. And now that things are all digital, I feel like I may have made this point to you, maybe not, but like a movie like The Irishman, not everybody likes it. I love it. I was, you know, unlike Killers of the Flower Moon, I thought Scorsese earned every minute of his 3.5 hours with The Irishman.
I hated it.
Okay. No, I mean, a lot of Italians tend to not like Irish people. You're probably like, I thought this was in my movie and I got to watch Mickey McPherson walking around killing Italians.
Is that Vinny? Vinny the Guinea?
I saw The Irishman. How are you going to put Pesci in De Niro? De Niro, that's cultural opponentation. You put De Niro and make him Irish? What the fuck is that? Anyway, but Vinny, wasn't he half Irish in Goodfellas? Watch your mouth.
Ma, don't say that.
So, but The Irishman is one of those movies where, like, if you like it, I mean, better example than Irishman, if Goodfellas came out today, that's a better example. I mean, if we take the classics of the past,
yeah,
Godfather, Goodfellas, whatever you think, Amadeus, On the Waterfront, and just make them, Amazon, on Amazon streaming, On the Waterfront, this new movie with Marlon Brando. Oh, cool. I'll watch that.
Yeah.
It is, there is an ephemeral, meaningless effect in the aggregate. Like our movies, our TV shows, great art, these things that people work on so hard. It's just, you're throwing it into the money machine. It's like, here, I made a masterpiece. Give me money. And if it lives on, great. If it doesn't, fuck it. I'm in a nice house. And I just feel like, you know, I try to think.
That might not even be the case for much longer.
Right.
That you're in a nice house. Everybody wants to do this now. And now everybody can do it.
Yeah.
This is, again, the sad thing about what we talked about. But that's the problem with everything becoming content, is that everybody. When I was in film, I didn't go to like a film school, but when I was in my film program, when I was in college, the idea of learning how to edit anything, not even a film, like the projects that they had me work on were like, go around your hometown and like get footage of your hometown and like do a little, the fact that I had that I was learning how to edit together a sequence of pictures, moving pictures, and put like, that blew my mind at that time. And people that I knew thought it was a waste. Like, my parents are like, what are you really going to, you're going to become an editor? Like, what are you going to do?
Well, your iPhone showed them.
Well, that's the thing. You just get to a point now where it's like, that was 15 years ago. Yeah, like 15 years ago. And now every college kid can do it, whether they're in a film program. Like, film program be damned. It means nothing. Like, you just come out of the womb these days knowing how to edit together TikTok videos. So it's not as special. But you know what people can't do? Fix the sink.
Have you seen that South Park?
Yes,
that's how right. good is that? Really how fucking good was that? The Panderverse.
They're getting rich.
On the, yeah. the handymen are like Bezos and yeah. Musk yeah, at the yeah, end yeah. of it.
Funny.
And I wish, I honestly, I'm at the point in my life where if I could become like a plumber or something, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Why not? Other than that ingrained thought of like, but I went to law school. I need to do this. And I'm like, but these law jobs aren't floating around anymore. These good law jobs, like at 44 with mediocre experience. It's not like I'm going to all of a sudden be a fucking partner at a law firm in 10 years.
Right.
But what you just brought up, and I think the mythology and the bullshit that we get fed is, now that people can make the technical things quicker, you'd think there would be more of an emphasis on true artistry and true no. genius. That's the problem. We have simplified the process, but are not heightening or raising the importance of originality and craft and skill and artistic vision or whatever. Not that everything has to be high and mighty. Like I saw the Adam Sandler animated movie. You know, Adam Sandler is kind of a very working man's funny guy. But I loved his animated movie. I think it was called Leo.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Him and Bill Burr.
Yeah. So it's not like you can't. I'm not saying everything. I'm not talking when I say high minded or artistry. I'm not necessarily saying this has to be, you know, a Kubrick masterpiece.
No,
or,
but how about something we were talking before we turned the mics on? So how about something with a beginning, middle, and an end? Can we even get there? And there's so we've talked about this in the past. It's like, how many pilots have you seen where you're like, great pilot. And then the rest of the show, it's just like, what the fuck is this?
Right.
What are we watching?
We've reversed, like we talked about last week. We've reversed, or a few weeks ago, I should say.
Yeah.
Based on, but we've reversed the order, which is like, we used to have patience to let art develop.
Right.
Hey, Seinfeld first season, not that great. Well, fuck it. No. Then we would have been deprived the genius of Larry David.
Yep.
And a great all-time great show.
Yep.
Friends, similar thing. Like, hey, okay, yeah, the pilot was like had its kernels of potential and greatness, but it was not a great pilot, in my opinion. But there was patience. There was an expectation that art takes time. We've reversed it, which is now catch them in 10 minutes or fuck off.
Yeah.
And that's not a way to make great work. And I think whatever the case, it goes across the board. I found it funny and ironic that like, I know the Britney Spears book is a runaway bestseller, and I understand she was a very popular, influential figure. You know, just because she's more modern, I think she's one of the most influential artists in music history in terms of
easily
pop culture music. She made it okay to lust for 16-year-olds. And when I say that, I don't...
Found in and of itself.
I honestly, even though that is a joke, I also don't mean it as a joke. It was this, like, naughty, like she mainstreamed the kind of like, yeah, she was underage in a schoolgirl outfit and everybody like, granted, I was in college, you know, but hey, I could have been Josh Giddied if I had met her. And, but her book is number one and very telling. Barbara Streisand's number two. And I think that's very telling that like an iconic artist and the kind of pop culture, you know, a guilty pleasure kind of thing is above her.
Dude, but the other thing that I think really, this might be my snobby take on it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the content, since we're using that horrible word.
Yeah.
If we're using the word content, a lot of the content and things that get made today, it's very clear to me that there is no influence of anything before, I don't know, 2015 maybe. People do not watch and listen objectively. If you go and watch a movie from the 50s or the 60s, really anything from like probably the late 40s to the 80s, the 90s even, there's so much talent. You had to be so talented to be in a movie. I watched Funny Face recently, which Audrey Hepburn, Fred Astaire. Mm-hmm. Audrey Hepburn is like doing ballet and doing full dance scenes in this like really wonderfully, beautifully shot classic film.
You ever see Singing in the Rain?
Of course.
Amazing. Singing in the Rain is actually funny.
It's a great movie.
Like it holds up.
Yeah.
I think it holds. And right.
And it's got a lot of substance to it. It's about something. Even though it's like a frivolous musical. It's
Singing in the Rain is a legitimate.
It's a great movie. Yeah.
And it's.
Well, but before I even go there. Do you know anything about like how they made that movie, JL? Do you know like the like Gene Kelly's? Do you know that he had like 102 degree fever and that dance scene where he's on the pole? He had 102 degree fever, I think it was. And he's doing this dance. And by the time, because there's so much water coming down on him, he was doing that dance with an extra 20 pounds of water in the suit. Wow. While he had 102 degree fever doing this just like perfect choreography that I'm pretty sure he choreographed.
Yeah, well, The Rock wakes up at 4 a.m. every day to lift weights, bro.
Right. But it's just like you really put it in perspective, the type of care that went into these movies and the type of, you know, what people wanted to do. I think a lot of it is consumer based. You were able to sell a musical like that to an audience in the 50s, but I don't think people give themselves the chance to be influenced by something that's that old. And that's a problem because like when we talked about Matt Rife a few weeks ago, I'd be shocked to find out that Matt Rife had comedic influences that were like Bob Newhart or you know what I mean? Wouldn't that stun you? I'm not saying everybody needs to like Bob Newhart.
No,
I'm just saying who is this guy influenced by?
No, his three influences, I can tell you, are Dane Cook, Dave Chappelle, and the cool black kid he went to high school with.
Right. Do you get my point? Like, it's just kind of like,
and here's
there's a lot of structure in a lot of those older pieces of work, at least like in the art that I care about, which used to be stand up, but music. And I mean, dude, how can you be? I just saw Maestro as it was in theaters. He's, you know, this is a guy that's a composer. Those, even in the 50s, he's influenced by Beethoven. Right. You know what I mean? Like, there's the classic talents and the classic work of arts should always be something that people go back to. And I don't think that is happening at all these days, you know?
Yep. When I was just getting into comedy, I actually thought it was my obligation, not that I was trying to copy anybody,
to carry the torch.
I bought like an 8-album anthology of Richard Pryor's.
Great. Yeah.
Because I was just like, this is me doing, this is something I want to take seriously. Yes. I'm not looking to copy him. But he is a great. So why wouldn't I listen? Now, I never took a stand-up class. I didn't want to learn that way, but I wanted to hear, I bought a Jeff Foxworthy album because I was just like, well, he's successful.
Soak it all in.
Right. And I could appreciate what Jeff Foxworthy did in his space. It wasn't going to be a style I emulated, but I could see, okay, but I'm seeing different types of successful, skilled comedians. Even if I don't think they're funny, there's a skill. You know, like Sebastian Maniscalco can be, you know, because he's so popular now, going to be very divisive. Right. I'm a fan. Not of every word out of his mouth, but I am a fan.
Overall.
And he is, yeah. And I forget who wrote kind of a critical piece about him when that movie came out with De Niro that got panned.
Yeah.
But they said something about him and they said, there are very few comedians, and they meant it as a backhanded compliment. They were like, there are very few comedians who are better at performing stand-up comedy than Sebastian Maniscalco. Like, in other words, he'd perfected the performance of stand-up. Like, he knew his audience. He knew what beats to hit. And you know what? In a technical way, there is value to that, even if you're not a fan of his. There's value to somebody being good at what they do. And I bought a bunch of different albums because I was just like, I just want to hear all the people who are good and successful, hear what they do. And I learned from Richard Pryor. You know, Chris Rock has been my all-time favorite. But when I heard Richard Pryor's bit about going to visit a penitentiary,
love it.
And I said, oh, that's
thank
the
God we got.
Yes.
Penitentiaries.
That's the, we got a free black man. We got a free. And then I went to the penitentiary.
What do you think they'd do to us if we were here, Rich? I said, fuck us.
That was like the father of Chris Rock's toss salad.
Yes.
Bit. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Like I could hear the direct lineage, not thinking Chris Rock's a thief because he wouldn't be so stupid but he might've been inspired by that. It might've been back of his head. And you get a new generation, a new iconic bit from that. So, I mean, from a stand-up comedy perspective, I think we're in end times. Vigo the Carpathian is on his way. And my issue with stand-up right now, and I think very highly of my own stand-up, and I think regardless of where my career has ended up or will end up, I feel I have done it in the exact right way. Not maybe networking, socializing, doing that, but as far as writing, performing, pushing boundaries, trying to find my voice, trying to expand my skill set, I think I've done it the right way. And there's many people who've done it the right way. But in this era where new people are coming in and they're viewing comedy, I think partly as a pathway to fame, a pathway. I always said to people, I said, if I ever get as good at comedy as I want to be, I think fame or money will come from that. But I am not seeking those things because I want to get money from being as good as I can be, not from a shortcut or doing something I don't want to do, but taking it because it's the money path. I think that ethic is, there's a lot of new jacks who are, TikTok is their manager, their life coach.
Yeah.
they are obeying whatever the TikTok out there. And that is not the path to good art. That is, I mean, I've made this joke before, but other professions who still care about the art are like, we don't want AI. We care about the work. And comedians are like, oh no, AI, you're not needed here. We will do exactly what the algorithm wants. There's no job here for you because we will sell out in an instant. Look, I already sold out. I'm doing AI. What do you want me to do? You want me to fart with captions and put it on TikTok? Let's do it. You want me to light on fire? You want me to kill my mom for the algorithm? Let's do it. That'd be hilarious, right? If I push her down the stairs in a funny way. TikTok, you want me to murder my family brutally and then put like captions on it because that will, you know, you want that movement. They'll do it. Like, that's not art. that's doing the bidding of a computer. And I don't see in my peers, and I mean this with all due respect, I don't see a Chappelle. I don't see a Rock. I don't see a Pryor. I don't see a Carlin. It's like if you looked at the NBA and saw no evolution to the game, it's like, well, we had...
post-Jordan era.
We had Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain. We had Bird Magic. We had Jordan. We had LeBron and Kobe. And then if I told you, and the new best player is DeMar DeRozan, you'd be like, what the fuck happened? Who's
Gerald Wallace is leading the league in scoring?
Wait, no. Who's the next GOAT? Trae Young.
Right.
You'd be like, what? What happened? Why isn't the game growing anymore? I look at a lot of talented people who I think have plateaued. And I think this is going to be a problem for art in general as it becomes lucrative and beneficial to become a contributor to the content engine versus being an artist. And I think the divide in many fields is growing, that you're going to have to sort of pick a side. You know, yes, there'll always be that rare gem that manages to be both. But in stand-up, I don't see it. I don't see the next person who will be, you know, even CK. You know what I mean? It's as much as I wasn't like a particular fan of his, you know, Burr, CK, like who's the next great? You don't have to name names, but I'm saying after that generation that we've been watching kind of dominate for 20 years.
I mean, for stand up, I'm not the right person to ask anymore.
No, I know.
As you know, I've moved on from it and kind of have a lot of disdain for the art form, but primarily because of a lot of the things that you're talking about. It moved in a direction where I was just like, none of this is even remotely meaningful.
Right.
I tend to agree. I don't really see that person either. That was another thing that disillusioned me from doing it. Because I was just like, I thought I was going to be among the geniuses of, you know, the Robin Williams and Richard Pryors.
J.O. Covans, I know.
I was just finishing your sentence. The first time I ever did an open mic in New York City, it was like a 6 o'clock open mic on a Friday night. And I thought, because I was on Bleecker Street, I was like 23. I was like, I'm among the geniuses. Look at all these people. And when you're really lit up about something, speak of the fucking devil that the light just went.
Pause. No, I kicked it out. I didn't realize I was. Can I?
Yeah, pause real quick.
This is
just maybe, plug that little thing in.
Maybe the best episode ever.
Hold on. I'll do it. Sorry. I will.
Do it. It's gonna be some heavy editing in a couple of weeks.
I can't wait. Do this over Christmas dinner.
Ma, I gotta fix the editing, Ma.
But I learned quite quickly that I was not among the geniuses. Not one in that room. I don't even think any of those people in that room are still doing stand up. And it just kind of puts you in this position where
I was in that room. Obviously, I made an impression.
We're not in that room, but
no. And I see a guy like Gary Gulman, and everybody I'm mentioning is like over 50.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm like, I mean, Gaffigan gave me hope because his special this year was like, oh shit. Gaffigan like stepped out of his normal zone and made what I thought was his best special. That was inspiring. But, you know, and maybe but I just feel like the incentives, the cliquishness of the comedy scene is just like, you make yours, I'll promote your special. I'll get you on my podcast. We have a lot of followers. We'll just keep boosting in the same circles that are now the like power brokers in comedy. And they're like, do another special. It's going to be kind of the same hour, different jokes, obviously, but kind of the same tone. We're just going to keep delivering, you know, the way the Rock, like a Rock movie. We criticize people who never make different choices in movies, but in stand-up, we are almost expecting people to keep making the same choices and delivering the same product. And as long as the spigot of money is turned on, it's like, who's going to stop and go, wait, I want to do something different.
But here's my other question for you. And it relates to all art, I think, at this point. But I think since you're talking specifically about stand-up, the big question to me is, in 2024, since we're about to be in 2024, what is the end game for people that want to do stand-up at this point? What is the, it used to be, to your point, it used to be to get the HBO special.
Right.
You want to do your, you know, Bigger and Blacker and your, what was the first one?
Bring the Pain.
Bring the Pain and things like that. And, you know, Live on the Sunset Strip and Raw and all that was like what you were aspiring to get to.
Right.
But now even that, it feels like you get a Netflix special and they just like fart it out. And I guess you can tour and that's great. But like, can you do that forever? Can you do that? If you're a 31-year-old comedian that hits at 31 and you fart out your Netflix special and you have your TikTok followers and your Instagram followers, can you do that for 20 more years? Can you do it for 50 more years?
I've seen people doing it for 10. And the thing is, financially, they're set. Some of those people.
For good?
I mean, if you've made $10 million before you're 40, cumulatively, you are good. If you want to if you want to keep acquiring properties and grow, you know.
I guess.
But I mean, somebody.
But are comedians famously great business people who can grow wealth?
But I don't know. To be honest, I don't know that we've seen it like this where like even me, take me as a low level example. I made more money in 2020 from comedy than I've ever made in a 2-year period in my life. And that includes working at law firms. Like, because there was just this opportunity for me through social media, through Cameo, through other things, private work. And I had my moment and I made a lot of money. And my moment has been dwarfed by other peers of mine who consistently get to, you know, so I don't know that we've seen this many people able to make 7 figures. And I don't mean that like there's 1,000 of them, but imagine if I told you there were like, yeah, probably like 60 comics, maybe, or 50, like who made 7 figures. That's an incredible amount. I don't think we've ever seen that. But the flip side of that is it's taking away one of the things about comedians, the struggle. And I don't mean to be, you have to be a starving artist. But it takes away something that used to be ingrained in creating good art. Like, I'm sure there's a quote somewhere of like, comfort is the enemy of good art or some, you know, some bullshit like that. But it's a cliche because it's a little bit true. And I think we've reached a point now where it's just like, yep, I like that guy and he's going to keep delivering good jokes, but he's never, you know, I brought up Gary.
He hasn't posted in 3 weeks.
Right. And it's, you know, it just makes me wonder, you know, and you can go across the board, like Broadway shows. We talked about it on the climate change episode. Broadway shows, people are making hard life choices, I think. That would be my guess, where it's like, I can create the next great play and it will be at a upstate New York theater festival and I will break even for this great work. Or... I can do My Cousin Vinny, the musical, and get a 6-figure paycheck.
Oh, ma.
Ma, what's a youth? What's a youth? What's a youth? My girlfriend's hot, and she knows fucking cars. Dum, 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 dum. Right? The judge is mean. The judge is tall. He looks like the guy from The Munsters, y'all. And, you know, so yeah. My biological clock is ticking. My biological clock is ticking. What do you mean? I mean, I want to fucking have a baby, you dumb guinea. Yeah. You've got a real choice. And I feel like comedy's not making, there are no comedians making that choice.
Pause attraction. Pause attraction.
It's a bullshit question. Pause attraction. So So my thing is, there are, you can see like an evolution. I feel like stand-up comedy, maybe because it's the least artsy of the arts, was the first to just go commerce. Money, get money, appease the algorithms, get paid, because we've been the most starving, the most shitty group of artists. We're going to be the first to just go, give me that check. Give me the blue pill. Yeah. Like if in the Matrix, comics would be the ones going, give me the blue pill. Let me taste the steak. I'll go back to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Broadway musicals and things like that are in like a middle stage where it's like you still have an opportunity to make good work. But the stuff that's selling, the stuff that can give you the career, you really have to make a choice most of the time. Unless, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, there's one Lin-Manuel Miranda. There's not 50 of them walking around going, I've got an original work too.
Right.
Let's make it. And you keep going up the line. And I think, you know, still in film, there's plenty of opportunities to make independent good films. But I think the devices, the media of film and TV are the enemies in their case, because it's the digitizing of everything that's making it less important. There are still people with access, desire, and skills to make meaningful work. But if it's just one of 19 new releases on Netflix that week, then what are we doing? Like, so I think across the board, I think comedians are the worst at it. And there's a reason for it. I think, you know, if you tell a comedian, hey, you want to make a lot of money, it's like, holy shit, is that even possible in this?
Right.
I get it. I get the nature of the beast, but somebody's got to still, besides me, of course, has to be committed to the art. And I wonder who in the next generation or even in my generation is like the, not just who's the best by default, like who's the best comic, who's going to be a Hall of Fame, like if they had a Hall of Fame, right? Who's making the Comedy Hall of Fame 42 and under? Maybe there are a couple, but you'll see a lot more in that 55 and over group than you will in the 45 and under group. But yet by 45, you could have known that Chris Rock was a Hall of Famer, Dave Chappelle was a Hall of Famer, Bill Burr was a Hall of Famer, Greg Giraldo didn't even get to 45, Patrice O'Neill didn't even get to 45. You'd know these people. Who's the fucking one-liner guy who died young? Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
You know, these are people you would have known by the time they were 45 that they'd already cemented a certain legacy and had done something new, original, or important. And I just think, I don't know that books are in this place yet. I just don't think we read. I think when it comes to books, we have a culture that doesn't read as much. So like everywhere there is art, we've got some flaw in the system is destroying, so people don't read as much. That's terrible for society. You know, plays, which will win out. Commerce will win out. Comedy already is sold out. It's interesting. And I think when you brought up, just to bring it full circle, that thing you said to me after our show a few weeks ago, all I could think was, is this the end? Like, or are we closer to the end than the beginning? Like art, like the universe maybe, is not an ever expanding thing. Is there a finite amount of it, of creativity? And are we hastening our journey to the end? Are we, whether it's streaming, selling out, picking a side, whatever the case may be, not reading as much, are we hastening that end more than it should be? Like maybe we have 100 years left of creativity, but the way we act, it's like, oh, we got five years left.
Yeah.
So on that gloomy note, I will talk about somebody that is advancing art in a real way. I'm going to review Jim Brewer's new YouTube special in the comedy section, along with the Punchdown of the Week. So one last break. Thanks for listening. See you in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. And it's Mike's favorite section of the show, although we kind of just did a bit of it anyway, the comedy section.
It's Christmas. Listenership's going to be down. I figured this is the week to do it.
Wow. Wow. Well, prove them wrong, everybody. Share this with a friend. Let's make this the most watched and listened episode yet. Prove that art and culture are not dead. But I decided to give Scott Pelley the week off. You know, he wanted to be with his family for Christmas. So I'm going to do the Punchdown of the Week. And boy, oh boy, This one was fun. I posted today, this is obviously from a little while ago when you're listening to this, but I posted today a video of Donald Trump being mad that Taylor Swift won Time's Person of the Year today. So somebody wrote to me, "You can do better. Find the words he hates, comma, dislikes. Pronounce them like you did stop. Dirty, disgusting." I said disgusting because they misspelled disgusting. Disgusting with a C as opposed to a G. But needs to be said. Dirty, disgusting, but needs to be said. And the person had another comment that was misspelled also. And their name is Trojan Pussy on YouTube. So obviously I usually dismiss comments that annoy me, but when somebody with the weight and importance of Trojan Pussy,
naturally,
is that, that sounds like a way to describe a trans person.
Yeah.
Like a Trojan Pussy. Like you thought, or like a trans man. It's like, you thought I had a dick.
Yeah.
But in fact, this is simply a Trojan Pussy. But thank you for the feedback. You can do better. Well, you certainly can too, because your spelling is atrocious. But yeah, I just gave him a thumbs down. I didn't reply. I think that's growth. My goal for 2024 is to be kinder to people online and meaner in person, though, just to balance it out. So, and then let's talk about the special of the week. And I decided to watch Jim Brewer's new special, Country Boy Will Survive, on YouTube. Now, as it turns out, looking at his catalog, it seems like he's uploaded at least 4 specials in the last 18 months. So I thought I was prolific, but obviously when you're dealing with somebody who can generate material as quickly as Jim Brewer, you know, when your set is like 30% weird faces, 50% MAGA talking points, and 20%, oh yeah, Jim Brewer from 1998, you can pump out a lot of specials. And Country Boy Will Survive, I watched it. And of course, when I posted about it, I think some people took it as like an endorsement of Jim Brewer. I was like, obviously you don't follow my work.
Yeah.
I watch specials. I'm a comedian, but I also comment on comedy. So I like to watch specials and not just dismiss work out of hand like an asshole. And sometimes I want to watch a special because it's bad. You know, I don't want to watch mediocre stuff. I like to watch good stuff and awful stuff. And I will say this about Jim Brewer's special. Pretty awful. Country Boy Will Survive. Pretty bad. Like, it met my threshold. But I will say this, because he's like a lot of people, except he's, you know, more on the right in terms of, obviously on the right when it comes to like vaccine stuff and Trump. But I've heard plenty of left-wing people say stupid things politically and stuff like that. But somehow he's strikes me as fairly dumb also. And easily manipulated. And I know he's an elder. He's somebody who's had some success in this business. But it's like you're watching somebody who he's not even telling jokes about the pandemic or but he's just getting applause and just like by sarcasm, yeah, because masks work. And you're like, I guess that's like a clap line and a laugh line. Like you're not even really, you're just feeding people what they want. But I will say this. So it's a pretty bad special. His political stuff, it's like, this isn't even what you do. Just like, I think political comedy is often awful.
Yeah.
Only some people should even venture to do it. Like, you have to have both a command of the material, but also some originality. Because everybody's posting political quips online nonstop. So you better be, that's why my Trump impression, I still do it, is because there's nobody in that space who can do the material as well as I do. So I still know there's a space for me to be original in a crowded space. But Jim Brewer is like, there are ways to be funny. Like, I will say this. He did a bit at Pastor Greg Locke's church. This guy is an absolute menace in Tennessee. Google him when I leave. You'll get a great, you cannot be a Democrat and a Christian.
And oh, wow.
And he's, and I don't even believe him. That's the creepy thing. He will just be walking around stage. He goes, I'm not going to listen to no Democrats, Bible, baby butchering, Bible burning. Like he's good with a word, but he's like a villain. Yeah. He's not even like a pastor. He's just like, they gave me a microphone and I'm going to talk some shit. But Jim Brewer did a show at his church. You know, just some good family-friendly entertainment, Jim Brewer. And he did a bit like a week after the guy on the Bills almost died on the field. And Jim Brewer got up there and said, oh, yeah, but no, the vaccine's totally safe. Let's go back and see what's going on in the NFL. And then he just face planted himself on stage. And I thought, being as objective as possible, funny. It's gross. It's not funny, but like his crowd was dying.
Wait, but what does that mean?
No, because their shared knowledge is that, well, we all know Darvin Hamlin was vaccinated. Oh, and that's why he had this cardio issue. Darvin Hamlin was a basketball player.
Yes.
And now coach of the Lakers. You know who I'm talking about. Yes. Is Darvin something?
No, it's, I'll look it up.
The guy on the Bills, though, yes, obviously the famous. So yeah. Famous, we can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But it was shared knowledge in that church tent that the vaccine had caused.
Damar Hamlin.
Damar Hamlin. Oh, wow. Harry's son. So it was, in an objective way, he knew his audience. He did a strong physical comedy because he face planted himself. Was it incredibly crude and stupid? Yes and yes. But most of his material on these current event situations, it reeks of a simplicity and an ignorance that only could be enjoyed by people who are there not for good comedy, but for confirmation of their ignorant views on things. So that said, the special was an hour and 17 minutes. Yes, Jim Brewer's fourth special in 18 months was almost an hour and a half. And he looks terrible. When I say terrible, it's like he's still kind of the messy guy. But, you know, messy and like mid-50s starts to look real bad. It no longer looks like, I don't give a shit. It looks more like, you okay? But I will say this, because I gave the special, I watched the whole thing. I laughed a few times because when he's at his best, and if you don't like Jim Brewer's comedy, I'm with you. The reason I ever saw him live was because he did that AC/DC hokey pokey bit at the end of his special, and I loved it. I bought a ticket to see him based on that and left very disappointed. But when he's really like giggling at himself and being like, so silly, it's almost endearing because it's like, look at this guy not caring. And I don't mean not caring in a, I'm an edgy guy, but not caring like, I don't care if I look stupid. Look at me. I'm just right. Like, my guts hanging out of my shirt and I'm going, bee, 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 bee. But there was something funny about that in a weird way.
He used to do the goat boy thing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Like there is a, and, so and stupid. Yes, but there's a place sometimes. There is a place in art, because we sounded maybe a little snooty before, but there is a place in art for stupidity.
Oh, Jerry Lewis is the worst. But how do you not love him?
Right. Know? And that's, there is a place for stupidity if it's original. And Jim Brewer still gives off a little bit of an original vibe, but it's surrounded by 55 minutes of like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So most people would just shut off. I try not to shut off somebody who I may not agree with or like if I'm watching solely for the purpose of evaluating their special. So it's not good. But I did laugh a couple times because every so often he loses himself in his Jim Brewer-ness. And, you know, my thing is, I would never tell a comedian not to get political. I don't want to hear people tell me that. But don't get political if you can't do it. That I think, is like sage advice. That's not me saying, politics, bro, leave it. No. I'm not going to tell you what to talk about. But if you can't talk about it.
And now, here's Bruno Mars with a song about Israel.
Grenade. Oh man, I've been blown up to heaven. Anyway, great song. But one last note, that's my review. But if you like, I'm sometimes want people to watch what I want watched just to have feedback. Like, yes, I'm telling you not to watch it, but sometimes I like comedy so much that sometimes I just want to watch something just to see, like we were talking about before. Doesn't have to be my cup of tea, but I still like to see what's out there.
Yeah.
I still like to consume comedy. Just to, and I'm less and less impressed. Because there's just more and more like anybody doing it now. There is no gatekeeper, but like maybe we need a gatekeeper. Much like Richard Pryor said, thank God we have a penitentiary. I think we're going to get to a point with comedy and art. Thank God we had gatekeepers.
Thank God we got penitentiaries.
And the only other thing I would say is I'm glad Sydney Sweeney never dated Pete Davidson.
Not yet.
I don't think it's going to happen. She's too good an artist. Pete Davidson, you know, Kate Beckinsale, you can have Pete Davidson. She's attractive, but you know, she fucked Matt Rife.
She was dating Matt Rife. I heard she was linked to Matt Rife as well. Yeah.
It almost makes me go like, damn, it is hard out here for older women in Hollywood. Yeah. Matt Rife and Pete Davidson? Man, Underworld didn't suck that much.
Well, that's debatable.
No, I mean one of them, but both of them? Is that, well, she did do like four. All right. Well, okay. Maybe that's just called justice. Anyway, guys, on that note, on behalf of Mike, can I speak on your behalf?
I think it depends.
Just holiday wishes.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Free Palestine on behalf of Mike and on behalf of me. Yeah. Happy holidays, whatever holiday you celebrate. And by that, I mean Christmas. But yes, thank you for listening, for watching. I hope you share this with a friend. Like I said, lots of ways to get other material from me in this holiday season. But I hope you have a great Hope you had a great Hanukkah. Have a great Christmas. Have a great Kwanzaa. Happy New Year. We'll see you on Rain on Your Parade in 2024. Ho, ho, ho.